Elementary Greek Grammar, Lesson 2, Writing and Printing the First Greek Vocabulary. Section 2.1, Vocabulary List. The student must memorize the vocabulary and learn to write each word. Do not fail to include the breathing marks in the written form. It is not required that one write the accent marks, although it is a good practice to do so, and I recommend it. The nouns in the right-hand column are followed by the form omicron with a rough breathing. This is actually the masculine form of the word the, and is used to indicate the gender of the noun. Pronounce it ha. Do not fail to memorize it with the word. In this list, I'm going to go through the right-hand column first. I will normally not be doing this, but in this case I will. The noun column. I will pronounce the noun followed by the article, the word the. Starting with the word for messenger. Angelos. Ha. Brother. Adelphos. Ha. Slave. Doulos. Ha. Fruit, karpos, ha. Word or saying, logos, ha. Now a few comments about the nouns. This is the normal vocabulary way in which a noun is presented, with the word the following it. In the Greek New Testament, of course, the article will precede it, just as it does in English. And I recommend that when you memorize these words, you memorize them with the article first. So instead of angelos, ha, as I read them, memorize it, ha angelos, ha adelphos, ha doulos, ha karpos, ha logos. Now the first word in the list, messenger, of course, has come into English in transliterated form as angel. It is refers to spirit being angels, but the word basically means messenger and is used of human beings in the New Testament, such as John the Baptist, who is called a messenger, an angel. But it would be incorrect to translate the word angelos, angel, when it refers to John. The word slave, ha doulos, is often translated in various versions, bond servant or bond slave even. The word simply means a slave. This was a cultural element in the New Testament times. It was not equivalent to the chattel slavery that America had in the antebellum South, that is before the American Civil War. A chattel slavery is where you put men and women and children up on a block and sell them. This did not normally happen in the Roman Empire. Slaves were slaves for different reasons than they were in the antebellum South in America. The word karpos, fruit, is translated as a singular. Now, in English, we use fruits, plural, only when we're talking about various kinds of fruit. For instance, if you have a bowl full of, apples, bananas, oranges, and so on, you might say that that's a bowl of fruits. But if it's all apples, we simply say fruit. We use the singular as a collective. In Greek, of course, the word karpos is singular, and it does have a plural form, and all nouns have plural forms, but I always translate the word karpos singular if it's only referring to one particular fruit. If it's various kinds of fruits, you could translate it as a plural, but normally it will be translated as a singular. The word logos. Logos is a word that most Christians have heard at one time or another. It's translated word in John 1:1. Logos can mean a word. It can mean a saying under certain conditions, or, and this is regularly used in certain forms, it can mean a communication, an act of communicating. As when we say something like, let me have a word with you. We don't mean a word like horse, dog, or whatever, or even just a saying. What we mean is we want to have a conversation or a communication. The word logos often means a communication. Now let's look at the left-hand column. These are all verbs, and I will pronounce them individually. The word I lead is ago. I hear is akuo. I see is blepo. I have is echo. I loose or destroy is luo. Now, each of these words is a vocabulary form in Greek, unlike in English. The first person singular, that is, the I form, is always used as a vocabulary form. The omega ending in each of these words is actually a personal ending that means I. You don't need the Greek word I, which is ego, in order to say I lead. You can just write I lead as ago, and that means it. Likewise with akuo and so on. There are actually three different sets of endings that occur with Greek verbs, but in vocabulary lists, it's always the first person singular. And as we come to the other sets of endings, we will identify them in their vocabulary form with the first person singular, but it'll have a different ending than the omega ending. Grammatical study, section 2.2. Certain grammatical terms and phrases must be used for convenient communication. This section will deal with common terms used to teach a variety of languages. First, we'll deal with the parts of speech. It's been my experience in my some 50 years of teaching biblical languages that students are not, especially in America, as well grounded in grammar and terminology, grammatical terminology, as they ought to be. I have this section in here for those who are lacking in this area. You can always come back and refer to it again, as we will be using these terms throughout the Greek lessons. The parts of speech must not be confused with the parts of the sentence. This list will be parts of speech. The next list will be parts of a sentence. We'll talk about the differences when we come to the parts of a sentence. Number one, noun. A noun names a person, place, thing, or idea. The thing may be a physical thing, like a house or a dog, or it may be a concept or idea. Most words ending in ants or ints in English are nouns. For instance, attendance, patience, etc. Words ending in ness are nouns, newness, wellness, etc. Words ending in shun are nouns, action, preparation, etc. Number two, pronoun. A pronoun takes the place of a noun, usually one already used in the context, to avoid the boring repetition of that noun. The common English pronouns, personal pronouns, are I, you, he, she, it, we, you, us, they, them, him, her, hers, and its. The last two are possessive personal pronouns. There are actually nine different kinds of pronouns, and we will discuss them as they occur in our lessons. These are the personal pronouns in English. Number three, adjective. An adjective describes or modifies a noun, or rarely a pronoun. Common adjectives are good, bad, beautiful, tall, short, etc. A verb, number four. A verb either states an action or a state of being. Those, in other words, there are two, broadly speaking, two different kinds of verbs. Common action verbs are run, read, eat, etc. Common state of being verbs are am, are, be, become, and so on. Number five, adverb. An adverb describes or modifies a verb, an adjective, or another adverb. If a word answers the questions where, why, or how, it is an adverb. Common adverbs are very, to, meaning also, here, well, etc. Number six, preposition. A preposition is a word that relates a noun or pronoun called its object to some other word in a sentence. Common prepositions are to, in, around, about, of, from, etc. We will be discussing conjunctions, pronoun, prepositions, conjunctions, and so on in great detail in this course. Number eight, interjection. An interjection is a word or phrase grammatically unrelated to the rest of the sentence. Some interjections express emotion, such as "oh" or "ouch," etc. Another form of interjection is when a speaker calls someone by his name or by any term of direct address. Common expressions of direct address are often set off in English with commas, such as "hello, mother." Mother is an interjection of direct address, together with "hello," form an interjection phrase. Next page. Basal parts of the sentence. And the word is basal, not basic. This is a technical grammatical term. The parts of a sentence should not be confused with the parts of speech. They often are. A sentence has different parts, and which parts it has depends on its kind of verb. Here are the 5 potential parts of a sentence that a sentence can have. Not every sentence will have all of these parts. That's why I call them potential. Number 1, subject. The subject is that part of the sentence about which the affirmation of the verb is made. A simple subject consists of one noun or pronoun, or compound nouns or pronouns connected by a conjunction, usually "and," but also it can be, I didn't put this in here, but it could be "or." That's common as well. Complete subjects consist of the simple subject plus related words, such as adjectives, prepositional phrases, etc. All sentences must have a subject, either stated or understood. We'll talk about that. In Greek, it's more common to have understood subjects than it is in English. We'll talk about it when we come to those. Example, the large man at the plate, notice the underlined section, barely hit the ball. That's the complete subject underlined. It has the simple subject incorporated into it. An example of the simple subject is next. This small ball on the ground was nearly white. Notice the word "ball" is underlined. That's the simple subject. The words "the," "small," "on the ground" are all part of the complete subject. The verb is "was" here. Predicate. The predicate is the part of the sentence that makes an affirmation about the subject. Generally, it consists of a verb and related words, such as adverbs and prepositional phrases. If there is a direct object or a subject complement, see below, it is also considered part of the predicate. Example, the large man barely hit the ball. The verb "hit" is modified by the adverb "barely." Notice that "barely hit" make up a verb, a partial predicate. The entire predicate is "barely hit the ball," but "barely" is an adverb and it's part of the predicate. The verb "hit" is part of the predicate. The word "the" and "ball" are part of the parts of the predicate. Another example, the small ball was nearly white. There we have subject complements. The word "white" describes ball, and it's connected to the word "ball" with the state of being verb "was." Nearly is an adverb describing "was." It's an adverbial use. Describing "white." Here's an example of an adverb "nearly" describing an adjective "white." This is the entire predicate. Do not confuse the word predicate with the word verb. It's incorrect to say that a sentence has, that this is the verb of a sentence or that a sentence has a verb. Yes, it's true. All sentences have to have verbs either stated or understood. But that doesn't mean that that is the predicate. The predicate consists of the verb and related words. And when talking about a sentence, it's better to use the term predicate than the verb of the sentence. That's confusing. The third part of the sentence is the direct object. Now, this is a potential part along with the subject complement. Not every sentence will have a direct object. In fact, many sentences will not. And we'll talk about that as we go through the Greek lessons. Likewise with subject complements. The direct object is that part of the sentence upon which an action verb acts. It is always a noun or a pronoun. Sometimes they're called substantives, which are nouns or pronouns, and sometimes adjectives that act like nouns and pronouns. One finds the direct object by asking the question, what was, plus the verb. Example, the large man barely hit the white ball. What was hit? Answer, the white ball was hit. Therefore, the simple noun ball is the direct object of the verb hit. The words the and white are adjectives that describe the direct object. A direct object is usually one word, or it can be a compound, as we will see, connected by and or sometimes or. But it always answers the question, what was, plus the verb. A subject complement. This is another part of the predicate. The subject complement is that part of the sentence which a state of being verb affirms. A subject complement can be either an adjective or a noun plus related words. Example, the small ball was nearly white. The word white describes ball and is called a predicate adjective because the word white is an adjective. Here's the second example. The large man was an outfielder. Outfielder renames man and is called a predicate nominative, or sometimes people will call it a predicate noun. But it is a subject complement because it refers back to the subject, man. Oftentimes in English when we teach children, when we come to a subject complement, we say, well, the verb is a linking verb. Well, that's accurate, but the verbs to be, for instance, are often called linking verbs. That's an inaccurate statement on the face of it. They are verbs that can link and become linking verbs, but they don't have to link. There are plenty of examples where these verbs do not link. They are simply complete verbs and have no complement and have no direct object. Well, they can't have a direct object because they're state of being, but they do not have a subject complement and therefore are complete verbs. We'll talk more about that as we go through the lessons. Indirect object. An indirect object is that to or for whom the action of the verb is performed. An indirect object is always a noun, or it could be a pronoun. Example, John baked mother a cake. For whom did John bake a cake? He baked it for mother. Not all grammarians consider the indirect object a basal part of a sentence. This varies. In Greek, normally, indirect objects are not considered a basal part because they're part of the function of an oblique noun. The word oblique means something other than a noun that acts as a subject or a subject complement. So we'll talk about that as we come to the way in which case works with nouns in Greek. Some basics about the Greek noun, section 2.3. The vocabulary list. I've already said some of these things. I just wanted to repeat them. Most Greek vocabulary lists words in a special way. For example, the noun is always presented in the nominative case. That's form one, as you'll see in a few moments. Which means that the noun is spelled as though it were used as the subject of the sentence. Or perhaps a subject complement. When a noun becomes a different part of a sentence, it is spelled differently than the nominative case form. We'll come across these. These are very important. Also, vocabulary lists almost always indicate which gender the noun is. I've stated this before. Nouns can be masculine, feminine, or neuter. Same as in English. One cannot tell by looking at the vocabulary form which gender a noun is. So vocabulary lists provide a word following the noun to indicate its gender. That word is always the adjective the, called an article. There are three distinct spellings for the article the, a masculine, a feminine, and a neuter. Here they are as they occur in vocabulary lists. The masculine is pronounced ha. Notice the rough breathing. The feminine is pronounced hey. Again, with the rough breathing. The neuter is ta. In the vocabulary list that started this lesson, all the nouns are nominative case, masculine gender. For example, note the first word in the list of nouns in the right-hand column, angelos, ha, messenger. The word angelos is followed by a comma, which is followed by the adjective the. Since the article is ha, the noun is masculine. Do not fall into the trap that some students have. The word ha is only following the noun in the vocabulary list to indicate its gender. In the text of the Greek New Testament, it will go before the noun thusly, ha angelos, just as in English, and will be translated the messenger, or in some cases the angel. Remember, you cannot determine the gender of a noun by its spelling. You can only determine its gender by the adjectives that modify it, such as the article. Some students mistakenly try to determine the gender of looking at the ending os, the last two letters of the vocabulary form of the noun. However, this ending is used with some nouns of other genders and also other cases besides the nominative. Looking at the end of a noun is not a reliable way to determine its gender. How do we know the noun angelos is in the nominative case? The case of the subject? The particular class of nouns from which angelos comes identifies the nominative case using the ending os, as here. In subsequent lessons, we will learn different endings for nouns of this class to identify other uses within a sentence, that is, different cases. Inflection. The set of forms of nouns or adjectives is called a declension. A conjugation is a set of forms, a set of verb forms. In a vocabulary list, for a specific conjugation, the form of the verb is always the same. The next lesson begins to examine the conjugation of verbs. For now, we will examine a verb as to its structure in the list and discuss its the nature of inflection. By inflection, grammarians mean the way a word changes spelling. Some languages, like English, have little or no inflection. Some languages are moderately inflected, like Hebrew, for instance. Then there are languages like Greek that are highly inflected. Highly inflected languages change the spelling of words for a variety of reasons, and an elementary Greek student spends much time studying those inflections. We've already seen that nouns have endings, and that adjectives, such as the article, change their spelling for certain reasons. Verbs are also inflected for a variety of reasons. Syllables. A verb can be divided into its component syllables. While not vital to our study of Greek, knowing how this works is helpful for understanding how the inflectional system works. Take the verb akouo, I hear, for example. It has three syllables, one for each vowel or diphthong. This is true with nouns and adjectives as well. Observe the verb akouo broken into its syllables. A, ku, o. Since there are three vowels or diphthongs, you have three syllables. A is the vowel, first vowel. Ku is the second. And notice that the diphthong, omicron upsilon, has the letter kappa before it. Generally, when you have a consonant, such as kappa, or any consonant, between two vowels, or a vowel and a diphthong as here, the kappa will go with the second, not the first. So it would not be ak-uo, it's a-kuo. And then the final syllable is the omega ending o. Each of the three syllables has a name. These names apply to all words in Greek, but only the final three syllables of a word are named. They are named from the back to the front. The final syllable is called appropriately the ultima. It is the feminine form of the Latin word ultimus, spelled ultima, meaning last. In English, it simply means the last syllable of a word. The next syllable from the end is called the penult. It is also from the feminine form of a Latin word, penultimus, meaning almost last. Like its adjective form in English, penultimate, the noun penult means next to last. The third syllable from the end is called the antepenult. The Latin ante means before, so the antepenult is a syllable before the penult. Now, it's not absolutely necessary to remember all of this stuff, but it's convenient. And here's the reason. The reason that grammarians only named these last three syllables is because in Greek, only the last three syllables can receive any kind of an accent. Note the following chart, which applies these names to akouo and luo. With akouo, the antepenult is a, the penult is ku, and the ultima is o. With luo, there is no antepenult, it only has two syllables. So it has a penult, lu, and ultima, o. The same procedure can be used with nouns. Note how the following are divided. Let's start with the noun angelos, messenger. The antepenult is ang, the penult is ge, and the ultimate is los. Now, notice when you have a double gamma, like in English, we split the syllables between the gammas. We do that in English as well. Notice adelphos. The antepenult is a, the penult is del, and the ultimate is phos, adelphos. And finally, logos. It has no antepenult. It's only two-syllable word, law and gos, penult and ultima. It is normal for Greek syllables to place a consonant with the syllable that follows. I already mentioned this. Unless the following syllable starts with another consonant, like angelos has two syllables together that's separated between the consonants. Exercises. Memorize all the vocabulary words and their English translations for best results. Use flashcards, work with another person, and say aloud the words repeatedly. When I was a first-year Greek student, I got by myself and I said the vocabulary out loud over and over and over again, sometimes at the top of my lungs. I found for me that helped. You do it the way is best for you, but I recommend simply reading it over and over again with the article, ha angelos, ha angelos, and so on and so forth, followed by out loud the translation, messenger. Exercise. Divide all the vocabulary words in the vocabulary list into their component syllables. As you do so, practice writing and pronouncing aloud each word. Highly recommended that you do this. It's not absolutely required that you know all the syllable names and so on, but it's a good practice to get used to the Greek jargon, because people will be using this for the rest of your Greek studies, and so you might as well get used to the names. That's the end of Lesson 2.